So you go down this cliff, go left down the cliff, left, and then just tumble for a while, and then you should be there.
When a competent observer looks for signs of despotism in a community, he looks beyond fine words and noble phrases.
It's society. They work for each other. They pay each other. They buy houses. They get married. That just sounds like slavery with extra steps.
Go into the automobile business and compete with the auto trust? Can I go into the grocery business and compete with the chain stores? Not a chance. Monopoly is the menace of free enterprise.
Because it's just a big money-making machine. They're wandering through a maze of inauthentic, fake landscapes, and they can't escape.
The message in all this is that the capitalist system in America is unfair and is, in fact, a failure at providing for basic human needs or maintaining continued national growth.
I can't wait for like the episode of like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where all the contestants like team up and they overpower the hosts and they share the money.
Bottom up horizontal connection is sharing at all levels, not top down control.
Because as communities go, so goes the nation.
More than before.
Really quiet.
Yeah.
Weak. Your first female guest.
Yeah. So yes, I got a Wams with me here. Okay, let's continue. Three Left Show, your source for radical opinions, analysis of the world today, searching of our messed up world and solutions to help fix it for a just war. So we're going to go right into it because I'm just terrible at, we just got to find a momentum first. And just talk about the recent, on Wednesday, Cuomo-Nixon debate. So here in New York, we have a gubernatorial race, and we basically have a corporate Democrat versus a less corporate Democrat. I mean, she's not corporate Democrat, and that's the whole point. So she has a stronger campaign than the last challenger to Cuomo. Cuomo is seen as, you know, he will run for president. He's kind of the Clintonite pick, or one of them, but obviously the weaker one compared to Senators Booker and Harris. So from the outset, I have some friends on Facebook who were kind of, the reactions to the debate were like my reactions to Democratic primaries 4-5 years ago, which was, this doesn't really matter. Or I'm not thrilled or excited by this. And that's when I decided to actually join the Green Party and like, well, these primaries aren't really worth voting in. But what was, so you watched about half of it.
And I watched the back half of it, so. And I've, you know, of course, mm-hmm. I've read a bunch on it now that it's been out, like everybody else's opinions, but, you know, Cuomo has, I've always kind of wavered with my opinions on Cuomo in general. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom was a teacher, she's retired now, and she always, like, had a distaste for him. But, you know, since November 6th, 2016, or what was it, November 8th, sorry, mm-hmm. You know, he's looking better and better, but... Now that Cynthia Nixon is in there, I don't know.
You're undecided.
I'm undecided. I hate to go... I mean, I feel like Cuomo's a little bit cut from the same cloth.
Oh, absolutely.
As Trump. He's the same, like, machismo...
Are you aware that he takes Trump's money?
Yeah, he does.
So until that date of 2016, he would take Trump's money.
Yeah.
I mean, he takes all of the...
Oh, he's been buddies with all of them.
Yeah,
he's,
exactly.
He was buddies with all of them
right.
before.
So this whole thing about... all his ads have a theme of, we fight Trump better. Now, this is all kind of a blue wave distraction from... There are real issues people care about, and that's why they won lost in 2016 in the first place. And they're basically continuing, doubling down on that, to the point where... I'm just seeing this as a complete repeat of 2006. You know, we had unpopular Republicans, the Democrats, you know, especially when congressional candidates, they're all corporate moderates who are like, I'm running in a red district, in a red state, so I have to be Republican light. So there was a blue wave in 2006 where there was a majority of Democrats in Congress, but a whole block of them were actually Republicans with a blue label, so, and wouldn't actually do anything progressive. In fact, they would fight it.
Well, that's how Cuomo's been all along, until mm-hmm. the Democratic Party, Bernie Sanders, whatever you want to chalk it up to, you know, has sort of shifted things farther to the left.
Not really. No, he's shifted as far as... Yes, he actually is reacting quickly.
In general, like, for example, like, in the Senate now, we have, like, a bill that's actually backed by several different senators for, you know, a national health care system. Whereas, like, you know, a few years ago, that wouldn't have been...
Oh, well, I've been part of the lobbying effort for single payer in New York for the last 5 years.
Yeah, that's always been.
And Cuomo's ignored it all that time, and he's still ignoring it now. Oh, well, I mean, this year, yes, because of the challenge from Nixon, who mentions a New York health.
Right, or we suddenly have, like, a family medical leave.
Yeah, that was mentioned during the debate, too.
That's something that's, like, kind of new and improved.
It wasn't sick leave, though. It was just the family medical.
It's family medical, but, I mean, technically...
Extending it from 8 months.
It doesn't have to be, like, a maternity leave, for instance. Like, you could have, like, if your, like, parent, elderly parent gets sick and you need to take 12 weeks off to care for them. But the only problem, I mean, it's offered now to private sector employees. It was live, I think, January 1st, 2018. And then it's... and then, like, for state employees, it's, like, the management, like, MC employees that don't have union representation, but the employees that are in unions, their unions still have to bargain for those, for that leave. So, I don't know. It's
still kind of every man for himself at the end of the day, which is kind of how most of us, that's mostly how most of us policies work out that way. There'll be an announcement that this is some great new thing. And its implementation, or in reality, it will be an every man for himself, or only certain people will be helped.
Exactly.
Usually donors of the governors.
Yeah, it's all like a surface.
Economically, he's been a right-wing Republican. Like, usually it's called the Hunger Games program, where you had different regions compete against each other for grant money. To say, like, each region has to put forward their own proposals for economic development. And we'll fund the ones that that appear the most viable. Now, of course, again, it would be whoever was donated, which means whoever is richer actually gets the money in the first place. So instead of just putting money into poor communities and letting them have a process to decide what to do with it, it's always we're going to choose who gets it. And we're going to choose who gets it based on some competition, because competition's good. And I hear this from, you know, all kinds of Democrats, which is why I just stopped caring about what they have to say, because all their reforms are still established on this. We need more competition. Republicans are just monopolists, but we're the actual good capitalists that like competition. Even though capitalist competition is still, I win if you lose. The mentioning of one of the things you mentioned brings me to, like, I had issue with a lot of the debate questions. A lot of the press, which was New York One, the local news channel downstate, they would frame every issue as the way corporate media does. So when they mentioned, when they asked Cynthia Nixon about single payer, New York Health, it's New York Health is the bill. It's the assembly passed it 3 times. That wasn't mentioned by anyone. Where mere votes away in the Senate. So it's not just a matter of a few senators have sponsored it. All the Democrats have sponsored it. Now we just need a few Republicans to flip.
Right.
Much like all the other issues that the governor says he did. He was really just arm-twisting 3 Republicans to basically vote for. Whether it was gay marriage, the minimum wage bill. And he only did so once it was safe to do so. Not only because all the Democrats were on board and then asking him to do it. And then there would be a social movement saying, well, I can get good press by saying I did this.
It's the same with the recreational marijuana as well. He's just very recently come out like, oh, yeah.
We'll study it now.
Yeah, because the commissioner of the health department recently came out with a study.
I think you can move the mic a little closer and see if that helps.
How about that?
Yeah.
I can speak closer into it. Actually, this sounds a lot better.
It does.
All right. I'll just get
I think it's just
real cozy with the mic here.
Yeah.
But yeah, so basically, like, he, you know, he's like a fair weather progressive.
Yeah, you know? when it's safe.
Right.
Which means.
And now that he's up against Cynthia Nixon, he's got to up his, like, progressive rhetoric, which, I mean, is great to hear. Like, I'm not complaining.
The progressive rhetoric, though, is I argue with Trump on Twitter.
Right.
It's not actually doing anything.
We're both jerks from the playground in elementary school, but we're, you know...
Rich.
We're rich. White guys. You know, but I mean, like, I don't want to complain because, you know, as
you can
soon
complain.
As...
It's safe.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, like, I can complain, you know, like, everybody has the right to complain about our politicians, right? But, you know, like, he did come out, you know, after the Muslim ban, and he was like, hey, you know what, I'm an immigrant, why don't you ban me? You know, and I appreciated that. I appreciated that he came out and said that, and I know a lot of times it's a soundbite, and I know a lot of times, he, you know, he's obviously
every
like,
time.
You know, he's got to beat Cynthia Nixon in this this primary, so he's going to up his progressive game. We'll see... Let's say he wins this primary, we'll see how much he backtracks on when it's, you know, time for the general election.
I don't know if this is a mask thing, but I'm very results oriented. And I remember from he's been governor for 7 years now. And I remember all of the terrible, terrible things that he does. And like, it's passive. A lot of it's what he doesn't do. And a lot of it is what he actually does do to then sabotage progressive efforts in every single area. Areas that would completely insulate us from the Trump agenda. So, example, during the debate, and Nixon pointed this out in a small way, but not like there was more that could be said, but time is limited in an hour format like that, that... Cuomo likes having a Republican Senate that acts as a firewall to actually passing any progressive agenda, whether it be legalizing Roe v. Wade here in New York, which was like the woman's agenda, passing a strong 15 minimum wage bill. I don't want to wait 4 years for it to go up to $12.50 here in where I live, and it's going to take that long to get the 15 in New York, where by that time the hike will be almost useless, thanks to a high inflation. Then there's just the politics of he not only uses money from his PAC and gives it to Republicans, he actively doesn't campaign for Democrats who challenge those Republican senators. He does nothing. And that's just the surface. Underlying that is that, the excuse that these Republicans are in safe districts that can't be unseated because their districts are gerrymandered. Why are they gerrymandered? Because the Senate, Republican Senate, was in charge of drawing the maps. And Cuomo made a promise that he would not sign off and veto any maps drawn by the Senate and not by some independent body that would draw fair lines. And so basically the maps were made by the Senate and he signed them. And there was not much outrage about it except by those who really care about fairness and government, which is its own little small micro lobby. So I remember that. So whenever he or anyone, any moderate Dem, talks about, well, we need a full Democrat Senate before we can pass anything, they're at fault as much as anyone. So I'm like, you're a liar.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to give you any credit, even when you're, say, et cetera, like as you point out, doing the right thing. It's always for a selfish self reason. It's not on principle. And it's interesting how people confuse those two things, or rather just don't put much import in it. The other is how, you know, letting your opponent frame the debate, you know, whether it's, so when single payer was brought up during the debate to Nixon because she came out strongly for it, they use right-wing talking points to bring up the question, which is, the RAND study said it will cost this much money, which is what Fox News does, because you're supposed to bring up how much it would cost or how much healthcare costs now, and that switching to single-payer system costs less, and even with tax hikes, everyone will be saving $15,000. your average middle class person.
Right.
So, and that's been our narrative in the fight for New York Health, which we're on the precipice of passing. It's just a matter of having the governor on board, and he's saying, let's study it maybe in another 4 years. Well, in the meantime, another 10,000 people are going to die.
Exactly. And I think in that way, I think it's important for people to consider Cynthia Nixon, because
if you're a Democrat.
If you're a Democrat. Correct. You know, and I would say that I'm more towards her. And, you know, I keep hearkening back to 2016. She's still a rich white lady, actress from, you know, New York City or wherever.
Sure.
You know, she's still not really a good representation of New Yorkers as a whole. And I think in general, you know, we need to have more candidates of color. I mean, we need to have more women candidates, and I think we have, especially since 2016. She's kind of like Hillary-esque in a way. You know, I don't know if you agree with me, but it's, you know, go ahead.
All of her staff are de Blasio vets.
Right.
So if de Blasio is unpopular right now, mayor of New York City.
Yeah.
Because he was also a two-faced corporate Dem who, his housing policy has been gentrification all the way.
Right.
A continuation of a lot of Bloomberg policies. And generally a lot of, well, let's do congestion pricing, but not well, so it doesn't get mass support, you know. Similar mistakes of Bloomberg's, but also just not being bold, really.
Yeah, she's Bernie-backed, right? Bernie's come out for her? No? I know Ocasio-Cortez is. I know they're out, hitting the streets together, campaigning. And, I mean, like, I like her.
Yeah, Nixon came out, and we mentioned this on a previous episode. Nixon announced, as I will identify as a Democratic Socialist, a week after Ocasio won.
So she's kind of like riding on those coattails. Yeah, exactly.
And there are other Dems considering doing the same. Some Democrats in New York City. Because, like, they want the DSA. They know the DSA can deliver votes in the way the unions have not been able to deliver votes.
Right.
Since the 80s. And, yeah. But they're just looking for a new meal ticket, a way of building a new political machine, basically around the DSA. Which means the DSA will become willing tools.
Cynthia Nixon. Now, did she ever run for anything before? Or she's like brand spanking new, right?
Right.
Because
she's the outsider looking to change the system.
I want to say, though, like, didn't a couple years ago, I don't know if she necessarily ran, or maybe she talked about, like, running for mayor of New York City or something like that.
That's New York City politics, and that is even more anchor-centric than us being New York.
I'm not super well-informed on New York
City. So we're
going
to go to our first break, because we're about to hit 10:20. Thank you very much. And
yep. Certified social justice warriors.
Okay, we're back. Welcome back to the Three Left Show. We were talking about the Comey-Nixon debate, and I think there's more to say. First off, I wanted to say right away, I'm not a Dem, as I mentioned. About 4 or 6 years ago, I got sick of how samey Democrats were. Rather, they weren't saying things I actually wanted to hear. Like they want radical structural change, or they want to get to the root of a problem. And create public financing for things. So who does that? Greens. So we have Howie Hawkins and Jia Lee, our ticket for New York governor. And emblematic of the difference between third-party candidates that are really, should be more impressive, but we are basically what we call a media blackout. Enough to make a lot of people mad, that there was only one primary debate between Cuomo and Nixon. So that's really limiting. They're not going to cover a lot. And it was in Long Island, meaning they're only going to talk about, and this is also from the local TV station who was doing it, only going to talk about New York City issues. And I thought they were going to mention upstate once, like one of the candidates even, but then they didn't. Only Cuomo will say, like, maybe it was offhand, like, this is something that affects the whole state. But, like, that's not lip service, even. That's just, like, yeah. And in Como, everyone upstate knows that kind of Como is not helped them at all. Like, and this is neoliberal economic development in general. Like, there is no economic planning. The closest is that we'll take state money, which is, you know, some would call socialist. It's not. And throw money at corporations in different regions. So Como had what we call the Buffalo Billion. This was $1 billion thrown at the city of Buffalo, and it was put into a bunch of major corporate projects, a health center, this and that. I think it included a solar panel factory owned by Musk, you know, Solar City. That's one of Elon Musk's shell companies. And weeks after announcing that they would get the money to basically subsidize the building of this project, they cut back or, you know, refigured how many jobs it would actually create. They actually said, oh, no, it's not going to create that many jobs. Other, you know, is basically promoting tourism upstate, which, of course, means it's about getting some people's money and move it to upstate, you know, to get them to spend their money from downstate. And it's like, well, you know, there is a more efficient way of doing that. It's called welfare distribution through taxation. So you tax New York City people more, and then you create a, you know, fund, and then invest that money into local independent economics upstate. So we can produce things and not just be servants of downstate and other visitors. Beyond just the tourism that should exist, like, you know, the things in the Adirondacks, where I was just was. Was there anything else that, though?
Yeah, no. I mean, we're still talking about the debate here, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, you go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, yeah, Como led with McCain was a great American because Trump doesn't like him.
Right.
And we're going to keep all the flags at half staff for him. This sickens me a lot because I don't consider McCain to be a great guy. He's not a, you know, reactionary. Well, he's very reactionary. He's just not as bad as the new Republican Party.
Right, right.
And for this, like, we're to celebrate the Republicans that are principled and we can work with. Well, their principles lead to a lot of people being a lot of premature death.
Of course.
And
yes.
So I'm not really respectful of the principles of people who just fight for wars.
Right. People forget. People forget. He gave the big old thumbs down for repealing Obamacare. And, you know, that was great. But we forget how easily we forget. He voted for war. He's been a big proponent of, you know, defense.
I forget if he voted spending. For Obamacare the first time.
Probably not.
But he certainly wasn't going, he's not going to be for an actual.
Well, how could somebody who's terminally ill come into something like that and vote down taking away a bunch of people's health care? You know, that would have been insanely hypocritical if he had.
Oh, and that's what makes him principled. He is not
right,
a complete
right.
Hypocrite.
And, like, here's
oh,
the thing.
Wow. But what
I
are you
feel bad
about?
That he was sick and he died. And I feel bad for his family on a human level. Okay. Like, I'm not going to be like, woohoo! Ding dong, McCain is dead.
We should all die of old age.
Well, right. He was 81. Although apparently his mom is still alive and she's like 106, which I thought was crazy. But
well,
anyway.
When you're rich, you live longer.
Right, exactly.
That's why you don't have. That's why people get conservative as they go older because poor progressive people die young.
It's funny, like The Onion had this article. Like, because they announced that he was stopping treatment, so you knew it was like inevitable, right? Mm-hmm. And then the Onion came out with one of their, like, their headlines was, Meghan McCain forced to live out socialist nightmare of caring about sick person.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, people were like, that's insensitive. Oh, we can't, you know. But at the same time, it's like, come on, many a truth is said in jest. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it is true. It's only a lot of these right-wingers, a lot of these Republicans, suddenly care about something only when it directly affects them. For instance, the guy who owns the golf course where Trump wants to build his wall. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, oh, suddenly I should, maybe I shouldn't have voted for him because now my property is going to get cut in half.
I think
now because I'm personally affected.
Never mind the environmental tragedy of golf courses and deserts.
Of course, yes.
And and better land use.
Right,
so on.
But I mean, yeah, that's just basically the Republican, the right-wing way.
The pragmatist way.
Yeah.
Care only about yourself. When something affects you, then it matters.
Right.
And when, say, the city or the state says we're being pragmatic about our budget, fiscally conservative, they're really just caring about their own job and position of power because they could easily spend more or tax more. And it wouldn't be irresponsible. I mean, that's why it's like, oh, socialists, we're irresponsible. No, we would be responsible. It's just a matter of using taxation power to redistribute.
And how much money does one need? You know what I mean? Like, if you're a bajillionaire, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, these people, you know, freaking Jeff Bezos and all of these, like, the richest of the rich.
Everyone who needs to be blue shell.
Tax them 75%, and it would still, they would still be, like, richer than everyone else.
They'd still
you
be
know what I mean? Like, it's, I just don't,
it's not
as
really
a middle
choice.
Class person, I don't, I mean, like, and I feel, like, fortunate. I'm comfortable, you know, but
you're
it's.
Your own house.
Huh?
You own your own house.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we don't live outside of our means. We're, you know, but at the same time, it's. It's one of those things where it's like, I mean, I don't ever, like, feel like I'm, like, hurt by being taxed or, and obviously there's, like, I'm assuming it's almost like a disease. When you're rich, you just need to get richer. It's like, you know how they say, like, people that get tattoos, like, once you get one, you gotta get a million, you know? Like, it's just one of those things where you just feel like you have to.
Yeah, that there's a deeper analysis there that can be made. I was reading an old, when I go camping, I basically grab one of those old paperbacks from the 70s, Radical Lit, and basically it's called The Liberated Man. And he kind of goes through all the ways the masculine value system is made up of basically a lot of strivers. You know, you're striving in a career, you're striving for sexual conquest, you're striving. And then basically it's like in the same way that a lower class person collects tattoos, a middle-class person is collecting titles to put on their business card.
Right.
Or dollars. Though there's no class analysis. I mean, there's barely class analysis there. And this is kind of one of the problems of
radical feminism. Yeah, and just for the record, I have no problem with tattoos, obviously. Like, you do you, but it's like one of, it's just like, you know, like once.
No, but once living vicariously.
That,
It's, second wave feminism kind of just put all of these toxic attitudes just on being of masculine values. But I would say, like, yes, that, but also their capitalist values, the values of competition, of succeeding over others, you know, dominating, and of course, you know, just the hierarchical relationship of employer-employee and so on. And that, you know, men at the time, and you know, now are the ultimate conformists. They just want to be normal, and that kind of normal isn't possible anymore. So they're just left completely impotent. And I don't mean sexually, but I just mean as people.
No, I know.
Can't grow, stagnant, and then they have to shoot up, and then they're just left with rage and self-hatred, which leads to another shooting death like there was at a gaming competition. Again, competition.
Right, in Florida.
Everything. And of course, if you're not a winner there, then you're nothing. And people just have to shrug and say, like, well, it's no more security, more law and order. And what in the NPR coverage was like, what's the responsibility of Twitch streaming? Of like, they're just
what
providing
is Twitch
platform.
Streaming? I don't know what that is.
Okay. Just like with any social media, it's like the platform for which people are watching video live. So it's used by gamers a lot to have a Twitch stream. Twitch is just the name of the platform, like Twitter. And it's the video streaming service. So it's a platform. Everyone, it's decentralized power. Everyone can just put whatever they want on it, whatever game they're playing and so on. And it's not their direct responsibility what the content is. Rather, as far as liberals like NPR are concerned, it's a conversation that comes up every other year of like, well, Google or this or that, what's their responsibility? It's a mindset of there needs to be someone at the top who's in charge or taking responsibility.
Well, there's a lot of sexism in the gaming industry, isn't there?
Oh, sure.
Like all these, like any like female, like gamer, like, I don't know, like YouTube stars or whatever, what sure. have you, they get horrible, horrible hate. Mm-hmm. And like death threats and rape threats and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
it's a toxic
like I've heard. I mean, like it's just something I'm not really like well versed in it because mm-hmm. I'm not into like yeah. gaming culture. But
as far as your every man on the street,
or like you know, every time like what was the Star Wars movie? Every time there's like you know yeah. like a majority female cast, these like guys get so like bent out of shape about it.
Personal attack.
Oh yeah. My God! It's like.
It's the living vicariously part of
yeah,
masculine.
It's, yeah,
well,
it's a
rather it's a
product of the patriarchy. You know,
right? Yeah, living vicariously. Women are said to live vicariously for their husbands, but then their husbands live vicariously either through their wives or football. You know, the liberated man writer joke doesn't joke, but I mean he brings up like he actually writes a whole chapter. He's kind of obsessed about it, about the Super Bowl. And it's like, you know, you have all these husbands who say they have no time to actually help raise their kids or do chores, but then spend 3 hours a week watching a sports game, which then their wife needs to. And then remember, this is 72. Now all the ads show that the woman brings out the chips and then sits down with the husband.
Still,
what progress?
Right. She still had to bring out the chips, though.
Yeah,
he
yeah,
still
yeah.
had it at his butt. Sorry, his butt parked on the couch.
Yeah. Now she can be male with him.
Right, exactly.
And thus you get Hillary Clinton and basically doing the same things that toxic males in the last century did.
Yeah.
And they're just doing it too, so I guess that it's not progress. Because the whole point of second wave feminism was to make either men adopt feminine values, or at least make feminine values actually normal as masculine values. So that they can actually build and complement each other instead of one just dominating.
Exactly.
If I may simplify.
Yeah. If only.
Otherwise, I was going to ask you, since you wanted to talk about feminism issues at the Walms, what is your definition of what does feminism mean to you and why? You can be as general as possible.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think just in a nutshell, to me, feminism is less about man-hating, let's say.
Of course.
And more about just everything being as equal as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And
does that mean having, let's say, movie characters where just as women can have transformative arcs where men help them change, that men can have transformative arcs where women guide them and help them.
Exactly.
Change.
Yes. And I think representation is like a big thing. And I think it's slowly starting to change. Like I have, you know, you do see there's a lot more, you know, female centered, like, you know, the role of the hero, you mm-hmm. know, in a lot of these newer movies and TV shows is the woman, or even like the love triangle. You know, instead of it being some guy with like two ladies after him, it's kind of the other way around. So, I mean, we are seeing a slight shift. I think we have a long way to go.
But isn't just reversing those, switching those roles is just kind of reinforcing the relationships from old media?
It is, yeah.
So I mentioned the whole, like, transformative arcs because I just watched a video by Pop Culture Detective. This is, like, the male Anita Sarkeesian. Does it with movies and TV instead.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Feminist Frequency is a YouTube channel / media company done by Anita Sarkeesian, and she basically did a feminist analysis of video games, particularly women in video games. The characters, the tropes, breaking them down, and this is attacking the identity of all these male gamers, where gaming is theirs. It's something they control. It's something that like they can identify as, that they belong to. It's not like they can belong to their job. You know, there's no control there, or their schooling or anything else. So, but gaming was there. So, a safe space for them. They could be themselves, quote unquote. Which is toxic. One of the guys, normal, feel normal. And she was taking that away from them by basically a moralizing things about video games. Despite being a good gamer herself and wanting the industry to actually grow, socially speaking. And so the same goes for Star Wars The Last Jedi. Totally hated by mostly male fan bases who feel betrayed because the director dared create instances where male characters need a teachable moment that's given to them by a woman.
Right.
And that was the case made by the Pop Culture Detective. And so, which is a really good point. Because I enjoy Last Jedi more than any other Star Wars movie, actually. I'm one of the former camp where the director himself said, like, I feel I'm only successful if I'm making a polarizing movie. And there's this expectation that Star Wars is supposed to be for everyone. That means everyone's supposed to like it. And that usually,
like, women,
to me,
you can come and watch it, mm-hmm. but we're still gonna preside over it, basically.
All the characters are gonna
be male.
They're
still gonna be male centered. They're still gonna be, the male is gonna be the hero of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I guess we'll let you appreciate it with us.
And they still are.
But,
that's,
you know,
the thing.
We don't really want you to actually.
In Last Jedi, the men are still heroes. They just have to earn being heroes by shedding not just toxic masculinity, but just their bad attitudes in general.
Yeah.
That the women help them with. They're just an authority, moral authority, as the teachers and the leaders.
There was that Ghostbusters that came out like a couple mm-hmm. years ago where right. they like switched it up and all it was an all-female cast. I thought it was great. And as soon as the trailer hit,
yeah.
the amount
You're
of,
just talking about the
like,
movie itself.
The movie
itself. You watch the movie, you
like
the movie.
I like the movie, yes. Okay. Yes, exactly. It was funny. I liked it.
Yeah, it
but
was a
yeah,
different
like
style.
The amount of like internet trollage
oh, yeah.
that ensued, like the minute the trailer
it
came
wasn't
out.
For people, them.
People that I know,
it was
like,
for you.
You know, men that would maybe even consider themselves mm-hmm. feminists,
yeah.
or you know,
or
like,
moderates.
I'm not like that. You know, were upset about it, and it's mm-hmm. like, well, why are you upset about it? You know what I mean?
Ghostbusters was theirs.
It was theirs. Yeah.
Yeah. But why do you have, why do you feel, in the word is entitlement.
And they had like some.
To a movie franchise.
Yeah. They had the character that was like, they had like some secretary for their headquarters
and
it was
male,
some
yeah.
guy and they made him really stupid. I thought that was really funny. I mean, but yeah, I mean,
did
that's
you know that the
just...
whole movie was basically the style of shooting the comedians, ad-libbing and improv-ing for like 30 hours.
Yeah.
And then cutting that down for each scene, which is why the scenes are so discombobulated. It's a completely different movie style from 80s comedies.
Right, right.
Where everything is very scripted and controlled and it's about the performance. With here, it's like, going zany, making cracking jokes.
It's, you know, it's funny too because
being improv.
I also hear a lot of this where people say things like, well, I don't think female comedians are funny. I don't like, and from women.
What do they even
I hear
mean?
Women say that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, because all women comedians are programmed by the same.
What
you
does
know,
that even mean?
Like, I don't know. And I'm like,
really
have you not, like, seen some of these Netflix specials that are on now? Like, Ali Wong, and, mm-hmm. like, I mean, I don't, have you, I don't know if you're familiar with any of this
Wolf
stuff.
Wolf is very popular right now.
Yeah.
Because she did the foreign.
Michelle
the
Wolf, yes. Yes,
she
yes,
did the
yes.
correspondence.
She got a lot of hate too.
And was lit there.
And, you know, it's funny because, like, you know, years before, like, Seth Meyers had. But anyway, yeah, so.
I just finished the set.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, like, Seth Meyers had done something, nothing any different than her, and he got significantly less hate.
Yeah. So we're going to take our second break. Don't worry, we'll only be back in literally a minute.
I must be talking more than you.
Yes. As the Womps, I must cuck myself.
I'm a mom.
Yes. I must defer to you. Okay. So welcome back to Three Left Show after a super short break. I almost feel like it should be longer. So I'm here with Leela Kapow. Am I saying that right? Yeah.
Good enough.
Good enough.
Yeah.
Right. It just sounds like a, that's a good name, I guess.
Yeah. Pow. It's got an exclamation point on the Kapowski. End, actually. That's the...
Because it reminds me of Saved by the Bell character, Kelly Kapowski.
Yeah, Kelly Kapowski. What a babe.
So one of the things I asked you what you wanted to talk about, and you want to talk about education issues. So
I do.
Go have it.
I have a kid. Okay, so my
and
kid.
Another one on the way.
I don't know. So my kid goes to public school. He's young. We're just kind of entering into this foray. And, you know, in our region, in upstate New York, we have a local newspaper. It's the, am I allowed to say, the Times Union?
Yes.
You know, they're.
It's our Hearst rag.
Yeah, it's like a pretty subpar institution, not going to lie. But anyway, I feel like every other, like, week, there's some article.
They do listicles.
Listicles, yeah, and they always do those, like, were you seen at the white cocktail party or, you know, whatever. Which is really
who
not.
We saw.
Yeah, like, yeah, and it's just, like, literally 120 pictures of, like, a bunch of, like, rich people in,
that's
like,
their website.
You know,
yeah.
Clothing manufactured by five-year-olds in another country. Yeah. Standing around getting their pictures taken for charity.
It's all very Hunger Games.
Yeah, right. A five-year-old made my dress, but this is for education and kids.
It's not much of a dystopia when it's actually, like, no, that is what real life is.
Yeah.
It's just not, like, overt. I don't know. It's not overt there.
Yeah.
Movie.
So basically, these listicles, I like that term, they're always like ranking the best school districts in the area. And it's always the same, like five.
What's
that kind
the criteria?
Of,
do they ever do
I think it's like test scores.
Test scores.
Obviously, like probably dropout rates.
Because children are numbers, right?
Yeah. And like it's, to me, it just seems so... First of all, they have a picture, and it's always all white kids in the pictures of the best schools.
Mm-hmm. We're very white districts.
Yeah, and
black
like, and a lot of times diversity is included. Like they'll give the stats, or they'll link you to whatever the institution was that like ran
these
rankings.
5% non-white.
Well, I want to say like a lot of these are literally like 98% white school districts. And I'm like, does nobody, like, look at these numbers and see that there is, like, a segregation issue going on here? Like, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, the other part of it
Howie
is...
Howie Hawkins of the Green Party talks about education explicitly as a segregation issue.
It is. And, yes, we don't have the institution of segregation written into our laws currently. It's in New York State.
Doesn't have to be.
You know, and, you know, we can get into it nationwide as well. But... It's just so hard for me. And, like, you know, I know people that post, you know, like, oh, hey, we live in this neighborhood. We're in this school district. Hooray! And I just badly want to say,
living vicariously,
you are benefiting, or not really, I don't consider it benefiting, because I feel like my child that goes to a city school district, and Dan, you went to the same school district that my kid goes
to. Albany
school the district, Albany City School District.
Be careful with the table.
Huh?
Be careful.
Oh, am I like getting
not
impassioned and slamming on
no,
the table?
No, no, no. Just pick it up.
All right, I'll be more gentle. But anyway, where was I? Yeah, I mean, like, all the teachers still have to go by the same educational standards. They all have to be certified by New York State. They all have to have master's degrees within 5 years of teaching in a public school district. You know...
If you make it about teacher quality.
I have my niece is in a suburban one of like the top 10 school districts, and she's a year older than my
kid.
Heroin
use is also the highest.
We could touch on that too. Yeah, exactly. And you know, I'm not begrudging them, you know, like people, you know, send, you know, if you live there and you're sending your kid there, whatever.
Yeah.
But if you're bragging about it and you're going on and on about how it's the best school district, you have to understand why you're receiving those ratings. And a lot of it is, I mean, you can hearken it back to redlining. You know,
you're right.
So, you know, you were redlined into an area where, you know, it's going to be mostly affluent white people.
In this case,
and therefore that equals the better school district.
A lot of them made the choice of where they live, which bedroom community, which suburb, based on their school district. So it's also a kind of I made the right choice.
Exactly. We moved out of
said,
the city before little Johnny was going to be in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. We had to make sure of that.
Mm-hmm.
because otherwise he might have had to go to school with dun 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 brown kids.
Yeah, because it's not a matter of, or just poor kids, because it's not drug use. There's drug use in every school district. It's not whether there's resources. Albany High School, Albany School District has plenty of resources.
They have the most AP offerings of any school district in the area. And I always bring that up to people when they say, well, what are you going to, all right, elementary, fine. Like, if you're going to keep them in elementary, then I guess we can reconcile that in our heads. But what about high school? Like, what about it? I mean, Dan, I mean, like, okay, so I went to a suburban. Yeah. Oh, right, right. Yeah, they just did the groundbreaking for it.
But it's being renovated.
I mean, so I went to North Colony Schools, which is, again, like, one of, like, the higher rated.
This is the suburb directly.
Yeah, where there's no dropout rate because everyone, you know, it's a generally, like, rich district.
It could be because
kids have more, like, resources at home, whatever.
Because if anyone's failed, they're going to get sued. So maybe just everyone's
right,
passed.
Right, yeah, that. So, I mean,
how well they do.
Your high school experience going to Albany High, I mean, I can't see how it was, like, you know, you're an adult now, and, you know, it doesn't seem like you were horribly screwed up by the school district.
No.
I mean, what was your experience? Like, what was your experience in, like, an inner city, like, public high school?
My experience was that the administration was more concerned with law and order issues than making the classes better, because other programs and electives were being cut. Photography, architectural drawing, those are on their last legs. And even now, as they've restructured the school to have multiple sub-schools, these are like themed blocks of classes, which then creates competition between them as far as like, well, I'm in this side of the school, and you're in that side of the school. Like, they first did it, but just splitting it up in half, which then created its own gang war between the north side and the south side of the high school.
We always have to put people into groups.
At least as far as, yes. And instead of being groups that, at least if it's one chooses, right? And then it becomes decentralized. It's more about the autonomy of each of these blocks. Instead, it's more of an imposition. Now, I think now it's more of a choice with these four theme schools. One's called the Leadership. One's like the STEM focus.
Yes.
One, you know, and the Leadership is like the civil service. So it'll be easier, or they'll have the, you know, public service electives, or just the go out and, like the Key Club, but all the time. And then the others will be like environment and something else. I don't know.
Yeah.
But from what I, the renovation of the school, the main priority was making it easier to police. And so that just made me almost like not give a, not care at all about the process, because like, it seemed at the end of the day, the main thing of concern was how policeable is the building.
Which, to be fair, my school was exactly the same way. They had these, like, Gestapo-esque hall monitors. Mm-hmm. You know, we had the Colony police coming in randomly once a week with the drug-sniffing dogs. You'd hear the click-clack, click-clack of the
we don't even have that,
German actually. Shepherds, yeah, coming down the hallway because there was a drug problem.
Of course.
And I think people forget, you know, there's a drug, and I guess,
we didn't have,
was it a few years ago, was it Avril Park School District? They have, like, one of, like, the worst heroin issues in the country.
Yes.
So,
I don't know the country, but
and I had someone say to me the other day, you know, a friend of mine's kid is going to Harvard, and she went to Avril Park. And I bit my tongue, but I wanted to say,
Are they high on cocaine?
Probably not. You know, like, it's not like every kid in Avril Park is addicted to drugs, obviously. I'm not trying to, like, knock Avril Park specifically. But in general, you know, people forget that with every socioeconomic grouping of people, you're going to trade one issue for another. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I mean, that's just something that's been on my mind lately about the public schools. You know, I'm, you know,
you're shamed almost for just
accepting
and just wanting to improve them in the tweaking fashion that
You know, I want, my kid is from a you know, he's from a mixed racial background, let's say, mixed cultural background. Mm-hmm. And I want him not only to, like, know and embrace both sides of himself, but I also want him to know and embrace everyone else. And I just don't think he can get that, you know, in Shenandoah.
That's such a feminist goal, to accept the multiple sides of yourself, right?
Right.
Like, we usually, and we're talking about the toxic men, or just toxic people, that put themselves into a box, a pigeonhole of one identity, one thing. They live vicariously through sports, the country. It's kind of how I'm starting to view anyone who talks about the good of the country, and Trump's ruining the country, and we need the blue wave to fix the country. And it's like, what are you talking about when you say the country? It's just not, it seems like living vicariously through it, like we need to do what's best for the country. It's like when you're saying, well, what's best for you? Who are we talking about? Because if we were doing what's best for the country, we would be talking about massive radical change. So the whole country, meaning everyone, is not poor. And a blue wave, or whatever Democrats will or will not do, isn't going to change that, because they've had my lifetime, your lifetime.
And Democrats aren't getting enough diversity. They're not bringing enough diversity to the table. Mm-hmm.
What kind of, like, ideological?
Racial diversity, female diversity, whatever, every kind of, like, there needs to be more intersectionality in the Democratic Party, and that's a huge problem. Because even in 2016, when we had a Democratic socialist, he was still an old white dude. Mm-hmm. And we still had an old white lady.
Because he was in the game and elected senator and representative.
Yeah, and, like, cool. Like, I liked Bernie, you know, I voted for him in the primary, but at the same time, it's like, you know what, that, and you know, I'm a white person. Our time is we got to step back. It's, you know, we got to give the table
the ultimate,
to.
Yeah, there you go. The ultimate stepping back of white people is actually to just step back from even the label and the concept. Because whiteness, and I'll say this 100 times, is a political identity. Because otherwise we're just light skinned. Right.
I guess. If
we just think of ourselves as lighter skin than others, then, you know, because whiteness is a matter of saying white is being on top, being better, and being the light of civilization. If you remove that, because it's not just the label, of course, it's the mindset behind
it. But are black people afforded that same privilege to be, you know, are we just going to say dark skinned now and then?
Ultimately, if
because I don't think like if we want to step, we're allowed to step away from our whiteness, but I don't think people of color are really afforded that privilege.
Not in the public sphere, but
right
between themselves, that's exactly what they do when they talk about who they're dating, who they're divorcing with.
I don't know, Dan. We're two whiteys sitting here having this conversation.
My effort is to stop saying I'm white. To saying, I'm not going to lump myself in with the colonial project.
Well, yeah, or, you know, you look at, okay, so in the 2020 census, there has been a big push to have people of Middle Eastern North African descent have their own category, because guess what they have to put down?
Mm-hmm.
Right. They have to put white.
Yeah.
And they are not treated white, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. So, and I guess, like, the history on it, from what I understand, I'm just, like, paraphrasing here.
It doesn't exist.
Is, well, there was a time when immigrants were coming over from, like, Lebanon, Egypt, whatever.
Ireland.
In the 70s. And they pushed to be considered white. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, with whiteness comes privilege. Duh. So.
Exactly. It's
and so, but now it's like, okay, so if a guy from Egypt, for example, mm-hmm. wants to open a small business and wants to get, you know, they have like those diversity loans, like women or people
there's
of color.
A whole department.
And they count as white. They are not going to, mm-hmm. yet they're not going to be treated as such by society. They didn't come out with it. Like, there was a petition. I feel like I signed something saying that I think, yeah, like, it's called MENA, Middle Eastern North African. Mm-hmm. And I, like, signed something saying, like, yeah, we should have that on the census. And they didn't, but now I guess it's under white. You have to jot down, like, what kind of white you are on the new 2020 census. Did you hear anything about that?
To me, it's just all crap then. that.
Well, it is. Yeah, white, I mean, the concept of race was invented by by white people.
So to get
so that they could categorize
to me to get past it, we need colonies. We need to drop it. It's not a reformable part of our language. You know,
we need to drop it, but also recognize
when
that
an activist thought I was when a black activist thought I was cool. He started calling me light. He started referring to me as light skin. Like I wasn't white. I had grown beyond being merely white. I was now light-skinned. I was what I look like, not what I identify as. And similarly, since the goal of most immigrant groups is either to be identified as white to get white privilege, if we're going to smash white privilege, right, and racism, then we need to smash the concept of whiteness itself. You know, because... because what you're left with when you get rid of whiteness is European ancestors, right? And you really can't say that, and of course many, of course, racists do, that if I'm merely just of European descent, that really doesn't confer more political power than being of Middle Eastern descent.
Well, I mean, and I guess you can argue, like, back in the day,
hypothetically,
it depended on what part of Europe you were from to be considered white.
Exactly.
But that hasn't really held out in the same, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like Italians are being discriminated against right now. No. Because they're not.
Well, because they worked hard to be considered white to the point where they created Columbus Day or fought for Columbus Day as a symbol of their. Well, it only exists, and they raised
Columbus was like the ultimate white supremacist.
He wasn't.
Too.
He wasn't a hero until Italians needed to confer whiteness onto themselves,
right?
To fight for the ability to be assimilated, to be considered part of the power structure. Because otherwise, every immigrant group needed their own mafia.
I think
so. They could have some at least control.
In our undying quest to eradicate racism, which you know,
I think everyone.
I don't think it's gonna ever. I mean, I think in what do they say in like 120 years, everyone's gonna kind of like start to look the same because it's like we're just gonna mix so much. But I mean, I don't. But people are always gonna categorize each other, and I think instead of fighting to get rid of the term white, we should be fighting more to, how do I want to put this? Like, I think it's less about, we shouldn't be putting the onus on whiteness. Instead, we should be putting the onus on making whiteness less the default, and just considering that we're all...
Well,
I hate that whole...
regime, in South Africa, white wasn't default. But it was still whites are powerful.
Well, in this country,
so I don't think
the default is usually like, well, white seems to be like the default race.
But that doesn't mean,
you know, like the benefit of the doubt is always
if it's not the case.
No, it's not. So, I mean, we could get into this, Dan. Yeah, we could go on and on about this.
And thus,
this could be a whole episode.
Our break.
Okay.
But no, it's a great, it's a great place to end, to kind of just bring up those ideas so you, the listener, can then stew in them.
Tired from work.
Nice.
Hate my job. I really ought to be in mourning, but I've got another shift this morning. Every day feels like it's never ending. What's the point of all this time I'm spending here at this dead-end job? Oh, we are the working dead, and we lurch for minimum wage, but I'd really rather be eating your brain. Look at you, you seem so bright and healthy, and your minds are full of joy and wonder. Stay 1,000 miles from the condition that I've got from all the stress I'm under. Don't come near me or you might encourage all these terrifying sudden urges. Seeing you make skipping work so tempting, don't you know that in the night I'm temping here at this dead-end job? Oh, we are the working dead, and we lurch for minimum wage, but I'd really rather be